south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's have a little listener feedback now. This one comes from Mike. He says, Johnny, hello. Hope you're doing well. Your recent podcast episodes were excellent. Does that mean the other ones were crap? Well, maybe. Or it could be, in Mike's opinion, the others just kind of sucked. You know, someday I want some listener to send me a list of my worst episodes, okay? Anyway, in Mike's opinion anyway, my last few episodes did not suck. Including the one, he says, focusing on the modern music and how most of it is so inferior to the classics of all genres, which, unlike rap and reggaeton, actually require real musical skills. Then Mike says, the listener who wrote that lengthy email to you really nailed it. And 50 years from now, I doubt if any of the modern rap crap will be remembered. But there are probably still be people really appreciating Led Zeppelin, Rush, and much of the other great rock and roll. Mike, me here. Isn't it funny? Just the other day, I was talking to one of my friends, an Expat Insider seminar attendee, who ended up living permanently in Latin America. Real bright and interesting guy, but kind of a curmudgeon. He's kind of a perpetual critic, and you know what he said to me? Why'd you spend so much time talking about that reggaeton crap? Nobody cares about that. And then Captain Mango phoned me up and said, yeah, man, that guy who wrote that thing, he was spot on. And Captain Mango would know. He's had a few Latina girlfriends, and they're totally addicted to reggaeton crap. And Captain Mango, rock and roll. So there's always a clash of minds there. And Captain Mango's mind, well, he's got a rather good one. And the mind of the average Latina, well, let's not get nasty here. Now, as for me, I've had many Latina girlfriends, too, and you might not believe this, but I can be diplomatic sometimes. Hey, you have to be when surrounded by that music for mental midgets called reggaeton. The key is, for me anyway, I had to learn to tune it out. And really, who doesn't like to watch Latinas dance? And when reggaeton music is on, you might absolutely hate the groove, but man, the positive secondary effects are tremendous. So, for me anyway, and I think for lots of gringos and expats, being diplomatic about it really pays off. Hey, I'm not saying you actually have to lie and say you like that crap. That would be a kind of blasphemy, contrary to everything we know and love about real music played by people who actually have talent. That just means for me, when they crank up the reggaeton, I know it's a cultural thing and a small price to pay for those previously mentioned secondary effects that always seem to follow thereafter. But I have my limits, and they end at watching reggaeton videos. I cannot stomach those things. I cannot watch those blinged out guys with yards of tattoos in their ass crack pants, prancing around their Hummers and Ferraris with those spastic, repetitive hand movements, bikini-clad bombshells falling all over them. And really, without having the tremendous luck of being in the right place at the right time and having a hit record, every last one of them would be a crack pipe, street thug, gangbanger criminal, with a 5x5 room and an orange jumpsuit reserved for him at the state pen. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Mike's email. Then he says, I was also fascinated by the information on stem cell therapy, including the positive results obtained from your listeners on many of their ailments. You mentioned you had some details for your listeners. I'd really appreciate it if you could please email me that stem cell information. And you take care, man. All right, and that was from Mike. You know, I got a dumpster full of emails after I did that stem cell podcast. Wow, did that strike a nerve with you guys. You know, if your doc tells you you need a shoulder, knee, or elbow replacement, you don't want him to go in there with a saw and put in a titanium shaft and a plastic ball and a hunk of plastic. That's so medieval. There's got to be a better way. There is no going back from that. And besides that, you know, those are foreign substances, so your body is always in reactive mode, trying to fight those things off like a low-grade infection. And it is technically a low-grade infection because from then on, you'll have a slightly elevated white blood cell count compared to your normal baseline before you had it installed. And forever after, you're going to have to be on medication. And that sucks. I mean, come on, wouldn't you rather drop some dough and try a really non-invasive treatment method? Basically, with stem cells, we're talking about a couple of injections in an IV drip for about an hour. Hey, you never know. Everyone's a completely individual case, but some of the results, if not most of the results, are spectacular. And for those of you who might say, oh, but my insurance won't cover that, but they'll cover a hip replacement. Man, are you nuts? You're going to let them crack you open and saw you into pieces because the insurance will pay for it? Yeah, I know. A trip to Latin America to a stem cell clinic is going to set you back the price of a good used car. But when you boil it down, you got two important things in your life. Your health and your loved ones, right? And well, if no one loves you, that's your fault. But your health, man, you got options. And you really are nuts if you let your insurance company select your options for you. All right, so let's move on. Now comes this rather odd but interesting email from Mr. Starr. Nope, not Ringo. Wish it was. He says, Johnny, I'm living down here in Latin America now. In fact, in Antigua, Guatemala. You've built homes, support structures, and the like. Both of my questions involve propane gas cans for firing up stoves and ovens. Seems the people down here have a lot of superstitions, but I want to get your take on this. All right, me, Johnny, here, let me give you a little background on propane use here in Latin America. You know, they've got no piped gas lines in Latin America. So when people make reference to the gas company, they're talking about propane gas that comes in tanks. And it's true. Using propane gas is the most efficient way to cook here in Latin America. People use propane for gas whole house water heaters, too, because they're so much less expensive to operate than the electric ones, though I don't recommend either for heating water anymore. These days, for a grand, you can get an all-in-one solar water heater on your rooftop. And then basically, you'll have hot water in your house for life, or at least 20 years, depending how well you take care of your unit. Because, you know, those things do require at least a little bit of maintenance here and there. And yes, I've had them and I love them. Though you'd be surprised how even seemingly smart gringos are pretty clueless about those things. For example, a good friend of mine who's renting a rather nice townhouse has a solar water heater collector on the roof and it's been working fine. And then he calls me and says, I think that thing's on its way out. It's just not putting out like it used to. And so I said to him, have you been up on the roof to look at it? He said, no, but the maintenance guy goes up there once in a while and cleans out the gutters and such. I said, I'll tell you what, you send him up there with a really soft kitchen broom and tell him to sweep off the long glass tubes because those things are composed of, you know, a number of glass tubes that run vertically to a 40 or 80 gallon storage tank. And those tubes are the solar collectors and you have to keep them clean. I told him, have the guy dust them off and hose them down because 90% of the time when those things aren't putting out anymore, it's because there's a caked layer of dust, dirt, and pollen that collect there over time. And sure enough, I got a call a couple days later. The thing's putting out like gangbusters now. So again, here in Latin America, it's all about the maintenance. It's something that we first world people take for granted, whereas Latin Americans don't even seem to have it in their vocabulary. In fact, I don't think I've ever met a Latin American who's gone in for an oil change in his car unless he bought a new car whose guarantee, and they've got very long guarantees these days, includes free oil changes for the upcoming 6 months or a year. That's pretty common now. Of course, like everywhere, cars are breaking down all the time in Latin America. I mean, they've got, you know, Volkswagen-sized potholes and such, so suspensions, shocks, springs, tires, and rims are constantly being replaced and worked on. And of course, all those big Goodyear, Firestone, Walmart, and Costco shops where they sell you tires and batteries and such will, when you've got your car in for something or other, suggest an oil change. And some people, in the spur of the moment, do it because it's convenient and the mechanic sold them on the idea. But do note that oil changes are not routinely performed. And, you know, as an engineer, at least in a past life, to me it's an amazing feat that cars run 100, 200, even 300,000 miles, considering the total indifference to basic maintenance like oil changes. It's a real testament to Japanese, German, US, and Korean technology. Oh, and by the way, there's a tip when you're buying a used car here in Latin America. Check the oil. Pull the dipstick and see if it looks like sludge or it's nice and clear. Because the truth is, if it looks like sludge, no matter what kind of spiel the owner's giving you, you know the drill, grandma only using it to go to church on Sunday. Yeah, right, that's probably not true, but if it is and they don't change the oil, that engine surely has a prematurely shortened life. I mean, really, if you're going to sell a car, wouldn't changing the oil, even putting the cheapest oil in there, seem to be the wise thing to do? Just in case the prospective owner wanted to look at the dipstick? Duh. Oh, and here's another tip if you're buying a used car. Get on your back and look under the car. Inspect the oil pan, metal, and bracing around the engine area. And then Check out how banged up and scuffed up the metal bracing and supports are around the engine area. That'll give you a great idea how many times the car bottomed out in a gigantic pothole, and or how careful or careless he's been while riding over those gigantic tumulos, those dangerous cement speed bumps you see everywhere. Too many dings, scratches, and scrapes? Don't buy that car. And secondly, when you're under there, have a look if there's any oil oozing from any of the metal joints, gaskets, or bolts. The undercarriage should be nice and dry and clean. And lastly, have a look at the oil filter, which most of the times you can only see by being on your back looking at the undercarriage of the car. If that thing doesn't look a lot newer than the rest of the car, or relatively new and clean, that also is a great indication that the guy probably never changed the oil and you don't want to buy that car. Unless, of course, you're buying a new or light new car, then maybe the oil hasn't been changed because it's not necessary. If it's got 5 or 10,000 miles on it, maybe not. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking about propane tanks. So the truth is, you're probably going to use gas propane tanks all the time. I do. So periodically, you're going to have to pick up some tanks or a delivery service will come in and drop them off. And of course, you're always going to get screwed out of the weight. For example, if you buy a 100-pound tank, there won't be 100 pounds of propane in that tank. It'll be something like 95 or 97. I've done the weight measurements. In fact, I think I'm the only guy around who will weigh the tanks when the guy drops them off. And I know the delivery guys are thinking, what a crazy-ass gringo. And when I tell them, you're shy 4 pounds, they give you the shrug because they're just the delivery guys. And then I call the home office and they say, oh, sorry about that. We'll deliver another one. And the other one will be short, too. It's just a way to nickel and dime people to death, not just gringos. They do it to everyone. Crazier yet, propane companies have ads in newspapers and on the net and such saying the weight is 100% spot on, fully knowing that no one's got a scale except maybe this crazy gringo. By the way, weighing a propane tank is very easy to do. You can do it with a bathroom scale. Do note, the weight without propane is stamped on the tank, you know, the empty weight. So if you're using a 25, 50, or 100 pounder, it should weigh that much more than the empty weight stamped on the tank. Hey, I've gone round and round with these companies a number of times, and complaining does no good. Even so, you should always be hooked up to propane, because if ever there's any kind of emergency power down or, who knows, EMP, electromagnetic pulse from the sun, taking down the grid for days or weeks, who knows? By the way, you know, eventually that will happen. We've just been lucky in the past 100 or so years. We're overdue for a big strike. And of course, you know, all the nuclear-capable countries have a nuke that can cause the same thing. There are strategic weapons that are built to take out power grids with an EMP blast. But you knew that already, right? Though if you're living in Latin America, you never have to worry about an EMP blast from a hostile country. Because there's nothing strategic in Latin America except the Panama Canal. Another reason I wouldn't want to live in Panama. But I'm really getting off the track here. Anyway, the cool thing about being on propane gas is that you can get 2 100-pound tanks of gas. And if by some chance you're completely off the grid and have no electricity, they should, if you play your cards right, last you a year. That means you'll have fire in your stove, in your oven, hot water, gas, clothes dryer. Of course, you'll need a little backup electric power to run the motor in your dryer and the pump for your water, but that's easily done. You don't need a gigantic solar power system for just occasionally turning on your water pump or your dryer motor. Just a portable solar unit or a gas generator will do. All right, our emailer, Mr. Starr, says that he's using propane tanks, and yet he says there seems to be some particular local superstitions that go along with using them. And this is what he says. Johnny, I've had some advice from my landlady about shutting the valve off on the propane tanks when not using the range or the oven. The theory being that it would somehow prevent accidental explosion. However, I would think that just as in the U.S., as long as your oven or range is off at the dials, it would be as safe as it could be. And then my second piece of advice came from my Spanish teacher. She told me to put a damp rag on the propane gas can every time I use the range or the oven to help keep it cold so it wouldn't get overheated from the oven or the range. But that one I think I've proved for myself many times, because even when the system is running and has been running for quite a while, the propane tank still feels cold all over. So Johnny, if you don't mind, what's your take on that? All right, Mr. Starr, I can tell you this. Seems like your Spanish teacher and your landlady are not up on their laws of thermodynamics. Who'd have thunk, huh? You know, one of those famous and well-known laws says that if you've got a compressed gas in a tank, you bleed some of it out, just as if you're bleeding out propane to run a gas stove or oven. The gas will come out much colder than the temperature of the ambient air around it or the tank. It's just the reverse action of when you pump gas into a tank. Have you noticed if you're pumping air into a tire, or if you've got an air compressor, when it turns on, you put your hand on the tank is warm. And when you bleed the air out, the air is cold. Same thing with an aerosol can. As you spray the stuff out, if you put your hand there, you'll find it's cold. So it really is wasted effort to put a cold rag on top of your propane tank, thinking it's going to stop the tank from overheating. It just won't and can't by the laws of thermodynamics. However, since we're talking about Latin America, a lot of propane gas stove setups are done in a Rube Goldberg half-ass kind of way. In fact, in many of the setups, there's a plastic hose going from the tank to the stove. Now, that can be dangerous because, well, plastic can cut, burn, or melt. But not from the propane tank getting warm, because it won't, nor will the gas coming out, but because your stove is producing fire. Now, the correct and more expensive way to hook up a propane tank to a stove is with a copper pipe. But you won't see that in most Latin American homes because copper is expensive and hard to come by. Whereas a plastic tube is under $1. So, Mr. Starr, I think maybe that superstition arose because there are occasional kitchen fires due to the plastic hoses. And the perpetuators of the rumors just don't realize the dangers, not the tank or the gas, but the plastic tube in the stove. Now, I'm not saying you can't get away with using a plastic hose that's braided inside with nylon or steel. Those are very strong. And if you have it hooked up to a standard full-size stove, the connection is way at the bottom, far away from the flame. But the problem is, in the vast majority of Latino homes, they use rather cheap and dirty stoves with gas connections that could be much nearer the cooking surface in the heat. And since most everyone's using plastic hoses, you can see the problem there. Enough said about that. All right, now we have another listener comment from Mr. Montgomery. Just listen to your latest podcast. He says, in an attempt to make a long story short, I stumbled on your podcast when I came to the realization that I do need a plan B. Absolutely love your podcast and have listened to something like 100 episodes in the archives. Although I don't expect to make the permanent move to Latin America just yet, till my youngest child graduates in a few years, I want to get the ball rolling on my plan B now. Coincidentally, at 43 years old, I've been told by my orthopedic doctor that a hip replacement is inevitable. Disclaimer here. As a youngster, I was an athlete and primarily into football. I was a soldier too and have been active as an adult competing in endurance events. After hiking the entire length of the Grand Canyon this past spring with hip discomfort, I decided to take up golf and attempt to find a hobby that was a little less stressful on the body. Ironically, it's been the golf that's really exacerbated the pain in my hip. So, wanting to figure out the cause, I got x-rays and an MRI. Orthopedic doc said the arthritis is so far gone, a hip replacement is my only option at 43. Needless to say, I'm not excited about them chopping off the top of my femur bone and sticking in a titanium spiking ball. Then, after listening to your recent show, I went back and listened to the show where Mel Gibson was on Joe Rogan's show that you referenced yourself, talking about how both he and his father had stem cells down south of the border. After reading and seeing all that, I plan to begin immediately studying my stem cell options within Latin America. Please send me the packet of stem cell information you discussed on your show. I really appreciate it. We appreciate your knowledge, your humor, your good work. I look forward to each new show. Thanks for everything, Mr. Montgomery. Well, appreciate that, Mr. M. Thanks for the kudos, but I'm not completely unselfish about my methods here. Turns out most of the information I give you guys, I have a pretty good interest in myself. For example, when I first came down here to Latin America about 30 years ago now, I was quite a young guy, but I had high blood pressure, arthritis in my left knee, and carpal tunnel in my right wrist. And now, 30 years later, mostly due to diet, exercise, and living in the Altiplano, my blood pressure came down below what you might call normal. I'm at my high school weight, I don't have carpal tunnel, and my left knee has no remnants of arthritis. And if it does, I can't tell. But I also know as we get older, we start wearing down. And my mother's got a hip and knee replacement, and I don't want to go through that. I mean, look, up in the States, they do a couple of 100,000 hip and knee replacements every year. And no one can tell me that's normal. So you can see why the orthopods up in the first world do not like the idea of stem cells. Nor do the hospital teams, who also stand to gain tremendously with that kind of patient flow coming in for operations. But you knew that already, right? So Mr. Montgomery is a relatively young guy, and he's thinking seriously about that plan B. Good for him. And lucky for him, he now knows about the stem cell options. And all that cutting-edge stuff is only available here in Latin America and certain other parts of the world. Remember, up in the States, they only allow bone marrow stem cell use. The more effective treatments using umbilical and placental stem cells are considered experimental up in the States. And it'll take 5, 10, maybe 15 years to come online up by you. And it will. No one can stop progress. Anyway, so this show, The Expat Files Living in Latin America, is all about getting that plan B together. And you longtime listeners know the fastest and easiest way to get a 2 to 5 year head start on that plan B is to come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. Oh, and I mentioned that 2 to 5 year head start not because I thought of it. It's because so many attendees have told me that later on. You know, it's really common for people who come down to live in Latin America, even if they're going to live part-time, to waste a lot of time and money and spin their wheels. In fact, I'd say the first 5 years I was down in Latin America, and I didn't know a lick of Spanish in that first 5 years, believe me, I was taken to the cleaners a few times for at least 10 grand and narrowly missed really getting gouged, and usually by gringos, not Latins. Yep, lots of gringos who've been in gringoized areas a long time are scammers. Scouting for fresh green gringos with rose-colored glasses who don't know Spanish. And of course, Scam Central is Costa Rica. And you know, over the years, I can't tell you how many dozens, if not hundreds, of sad stories I've heard from gringos who've been scammed. So in the end, coming down to my Expat Insider Seminar will cost you some dough, but you'll walk away with so much great information, and you'll be able to save yourself a ton of money, probably 5 to 10 times what you paid for the seminar, just in Latin American scam avoidance techniques. Plus, you'll hook up with a great network of people, which is exactly what you need when you first come down, and exactly what I didn't have when I came. You know, lawyers, MDs, dentists, hospitals, clinics, housing, insurance plans, real estate, the works. Talk about fast-tracking your way to a plan B. So my next one starts Friday, January 10th in the evening and goes through Thursday, January 16th. And right now we're doing some website redesign, so by the time this show comes out on Sunday, October 20th, you should be able to go to my website, theexpatfiles.com, and that's where you'll get all the information and sign-up details. So go to theexpatfiles.com, all one word, and check it out. And if for some reason the site's not up and flying yet, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, now I'm going to read an email from Mr. Doug. He's asking questions I get from lots of gringos and expats, so listen up. He says, Johnny, I've heard you discuss the shipping method of consolidated air cargo from Miami to various Latin American cities and countries. How does the issue of customs and duties work? Is it cumbersome like with FedEx? What about items like cigars that might have quantity restrictions? Do these Miami services take care of the customs and entry payment, or are you, the recipient, responsible? Could you please give me the name of a couple of actual Miami companies doing this? Oh, and another thing, do you think it might be $1 per kilo sending from Miami to most of Central America or South America, or does it vary widely between countries? All right, Doug, here's how it works. Almost all Latin countries now have Miami freight forwarding services. In other words, if, for example, you're ordering from eBay or Amazon, you'll have your regular credit card billing address when you do the deal, but your shipping address will be your name followed by the address of the Miami mail forwarding service, followed by a code that your forwarding service will give you, like X327. That's how they know it's going to get shipped to Panama, Honduras, Guatemala, whatever country. So figure Amazon sends the stuff to Miami, takes 2 or 3 days, and then it takes maybe 5 more days from the Miami box to your Latin country. So normally, anything you order from Amazon, eBay, or anywhere will end up at your doorstep, or at least at the central location of your mail forwarding service, within 2 weeks or less, often just a week. And you'll be happy to know most of these freight forwarding services have worked out a deal with the customs and aduana within the country where you don't have to pay any customs or duty on anything under $300 or $200, depending on the country. So, for example, if the Amazon invoice says $136, you will pay no duties or taxes at all. However, if the invoice says $360, let's say, yes, you will pay some taxes. Oh, and if you come to my Expat Insider Seminar, I'll tell you a workaround how you don't pay any taxes at all. By the way, if there are any taxes, your freight forwarder will pay them, and you'll pay upon receipt of your item. And generally, most freight forwarding services charge by the pound, from $3 to $10 a pound, depending on the service you're using. I generally use those services for expensive stuff that doesn't weigh much. And it seems they're all pretty secure and guaranteed too. But for example, if you're going to send large, heavy stuff, those normal freight forwarding services could cost you a ton because let's suppose you're going to order a compressor or a drill or a table saw from Amazon and it weighs 50 pounds. Well, then your shipping charges could cost more than the item itself and it's not worth it. Oh, and don't forget, you can find 98% of everything here in Latin America, even specialty items, but normally it'll be much more expensive. For example, if you want a particular model of a Bose stereo, you probably could find it here in Latin America, but it's going to be in a high-rent mall and maybe a third to a half more than what you'd pay on Amazon. But you got to consider the shipping charges then. Now, the services I've been talking about ship by air. The ones that ship by sea are much less expensive, though it takes sometimes 3 weeks or a month for them to get to you because they load them up in a container and the container lands and they sort it out. It takes a little time. One of those, for example, is called Transcargo. Goes from Miami to Guatemala. They don't charge by the pound, but by the cubic foot. Man, you can get a lot of stuff in a cubic foot. Now, suppose you wanted to ship tires or tiles or batteries or just a lot of clothes. Well, those items can be heavy and large in volume, so that's the kind of service you want to use, one that ships by boat. And some of these services, believe it or not, like Transcargo, will include the import taxes and duties in the price. In other words, they cover it, and you just pay one cost. For example, I'm looking at Transcargo's price list right now, and it says, if you send 3 cubic feet or less, it's $35 a cubic foot, complete, taxes and duties included. However, if you send 4 cubic feet or more, it's only $14 a cubic foot. Now, that's great if you're sending a lot of clothes, shoes, furniture, solar panels, etc. Oh, and it says on the list, if you're sending furniture, it's $13 a cubic foot. So let's say, for example, you've got a dining room set with 6 chairs. It's an ugly heirloom from your great-grandma, so you don't want to sell it and rebuy when you get to Latin America. That works out to around 20 cubic feet. That means you'd be paying about $260 to send your dining room set and 6 chairs. So depending on what it's worth to you, it could be a great deal. One of the great reasons to use one of these services is because they handle the taxes and the aduana and any other government fees. You just pay them and they do it all for you. And you can either pick it up at their main office or they'll deliver it to your door for a very small additional charge. For example, if you order a bunch of stuff from Amazon, it might cost you just $3 to $5 to have them deliver it right to your house, especially if the boxes are small enough for them to carry it on a motorcycle. That, believe it or not, is how most things are delivered here in Latin America, by motorcycle. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.